sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Yisar Hess, Executive Director and CEO of the Mesorti Conservative Judaism Movement in Israel. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our new Shinshinim, Chen Denachi and Tamir Shakuri, and our Maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's nearly time to say L'shana Tova Metuka, or L'shana Tova Tikatevu V'techa Temu, a good and a sweet new year. This is the final show of our 5777 Jewish year, and every end is also a beginning. It's an exciting, energetic, challenging time of year, a period when we Jews examine our lives in these last 12 months and seek to improve in the year to come. The great beauty of the Jewish High Holy Day season is the wonderful opportunity it provides for each of us to start over. Whatever it is that we've done in the past year, whoever we've offended, however we've failed, we now have the chance to begin again, to remake our personal world. The Hebrew word tshuva means more than just repentance. It means return to the best that is within us. In the course of a long year, even the most ethical people have been known to act in ways that are less than stellar, to do things we're not proud of having done. In a basic human way, the High Holy Days ask us to remove the burden of guilt, that very Jewish of emotions, and restore the delicate balance we all need in our lives. By repairing our relations with others, we can reignite the divine spark within us, return to being the good people we truly wish to be. If we are fortunate and sincere in our tshuva, we can even rediscover the idealism we've hidden away so deeply under the weight of daily responsibilities and emotional baggage, and we can emerge from this period of the year refreshed, replenished, ready to live better lives in the new 5778 year. What a gift. But first, of course, we have to admit we made mistakes. In this season of Eight Ratzon, this time of potential divine favor, it's also essential for us to look at our Jewish community. In order to make tshuva effective, we must honestly examine both our individual actions and the ways we have worked collectively. In the past year, have we really done all we could do to improve our microcosm of the Jewish world? Or are we simply perpetuating the same mistakes annually? The Hebrew word for year, shana, comes from the same root word as the Hebrew word for change. The lesson is obvious. Where we have not succeeded, we must seek new ways to do things. Where we are not meeting our goals and ideals, we must strive to change. And change is often hard. We are used to doing what we have always done. Change means doing things the way we haven't done them in this past year, or maybe ever. It means stretching, reaching beyond our comfort zones in a quest to improve our lives and our world. In fact, in every area of our lives, Jewish or secular, this is the time to figure out what we're not doing so well, what we need to improve on in order to do better. This serious, holy time of year gives each of us the chance to make 5778 a better year. And the time to begin that process is right now. Rosh Hashanah is nearly here, arriving this coming Wednesday night to herald a new year of 5778. It is the most important time of year for Jews and the most moving. To help prepare properly, we continue our preview of the music of these High Holy Days with Unetane Tokef. We observe the mighty holiness of this day, one of awe and trembling. From the Danzig Tradition CD, the choir of the Great Synagogue of Jerusalem and cantor Naftali Hershtick. Unetane Tokef.
Unetane Tokef.
That was Una Tanitoka for Rosh Hashanah and the Days of Awe, coming soon to a temple near you. The Jewish New Year begins this Wednesday night at sundown, September 20th, with Rosh Hashanah morning services, the 21st and 22nd as well. Our guest this morning on this final Too Jewish of the Year is a good friend, Yizhar Hess, the executive director and CEO of the Masorti Conservative Judaism Movement in Israel, and of course, our very first Too Jewish maven on Israel back when he was the shliach to Tucson, Arizona, 15 years ago when we started Too Jewish. He's risen in the world, and we're still doing Too Jewish. Meet Yizhar Hess again. Find out what exactly is happening with co-ed prayer at the Kotel in Jerusalem, the Western Wall, when we return in a moment here on the final Too Jewish show of 5777.
Join your voice with renowned Jewish singer Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson J. Sing, dance, and celebrate the holiday of Sukkot with the whole family. Billy Jonas has been entertaining the world with his funky folk music for years. Join the fun with Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson J. Tickets include a light dinner and a PJ Library story. For tickets and more information, visit TucsonJCC.org or call 520-299-3000.
We are delighted to welcome an old friend back to Too Jewish, a man who really needs no introduction, but I'm obligated to do so. Yizhar Hess is head of the Masorti movement in Israel. He was our very first maven on Israel and Too Jewish some 15 years ago. Boker Tov, welcome to Too Jewish. Welcome back.
Boker Tov, Rabbi Cohen. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
And of course, L'Shana Tova, good and a healthy new year.
You too, and to your listeners.
Thank you. So the Masorti movement is the analog to the conservative movement here in America. I want to get right into the issue that has been so dramatic and problematic, the extension of an egalitarian prayer area at the Davidson Center into a major center at the Kotel, the Western Wall. Briefly give us a synopsis of where we are on that up till now.
So it's been now 50 years this year since the Six-Day War, when Jews were able again to pray next to the Wailing Wall, next to the Kotel. And ever since that year, there were people, Jews, from other streams than Orthodoxy, who really wanted to daven, to pray next to the Kotel in an egalitarian fashion. And they were not able to do so because of the monopoly that exists in Israel over religion by the Orthodox establishment. And for the last 30 years, this civil discourse or religious discourse or battle took place. And for every Rosh Chodesh, every the day of the beginning of the month, a group of brave women named Women of the Wall were trying to have their own minyan in the women's section next to the wall. And they couldn't do so. They were harassed. And we, the Masorti movement, the conservative Judaism, we tried to assist them as well as the reform movement in Israel. And jointly, we created a demand to change the regulations at the Kotel. About 4 years ago, the prime minister asked the chairman of the Jewish agency, Natan Sharansky, and Secretary of the Cabinet, Avichai Mendelblit, to try to solve the issue. And they conducted very thorough and intensive negotiations with the two sides. From the one side, it was us, the conservative movement, the reform movement, Women of the Wall, as well as the Jewish Federations of North America. And from the other side, there were the Haredim, represented by the heads of the Haredi parties in the Knesset, and the Orthodox Rabbi of the Kotel. And it was interesting, Rabbi Cohen, because for 3 years we sat, not in one room, we never shook hands, no photo opportunities, but we were in two separate rooms, actually, in each group in its own. And both Sharansky and the Secretary of the Cabinet went from one room to another room, from one side to another side, and we were able to conduct a very serious negotiations that ended on January 2015, January 2016, a year and a half ago, a little more than a year and a half ago, and the Cabinet of the State of Israel approved the agreement. The agreement was basically to try to expand the paradigm, to take one side of the Kotel, the southern side of the Western Wall, and to decide that that side would be an egalitarian side, unlike the regular Kotel or the more known Kotel, that will be kept orthodox, or the minhag there, the custom there would be orthodox. It wasn't easy for us to let go and to come to terms with the fact that the known Kotel will not have an egalitarian prayer, but we thought that for the sake of Jerusalem, for solving one of the most contentious topic or disputes, we will let go of some of our principles in order to bring peace to Jerusalem. But unfortunately, this agreement was never implemented. And about 3 years ago, the government voted to sustain it, to freeze it. And ever since then, the dispute escalated. And last week, we went to court again. And we are not sure how it would end, but it's definitely a crisis that developed here between Israelis in Israel and between Jews who live in the diaspora and Jews who live in Israel.
It's difficult and challenging and, of course, really quite sad that this carefully mediated agreement was stuck on a back porch, if you will. We'll talk more about that and what's about to happen or what might not happen or what's going on right now at the Kotel, and then more broadly with liberal Judaism, a sorti movement, when we come back with Yisar Hess in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as a very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in North America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Been talking the last couple of weeks about a trip you led as a 20-year-old of Ramah kids to Russia. And obviously, it's a few years back. This is the height of the Cold War. You met with Jewish community members there, and I guess because you came in on a bus, they didn't like go through all your stuff and confiscate all the Jewish items. But that was a different world then.
It was a very different world. And for the record, when I planned the trip and went to pay for it, I was 20. But when I actually executed the trip, I was 21.
Oh, 21. Right. Boy, right. That's old.
Right. So,
incredible. Leading 16-year-olds.
Right. So the first trip, we did enter by bus. We crossed all of Eastern Europe by bus, and there was virtually no customs at all. So we did bring in a lot of prayer books and Hebrew Bibles and stuff like that, and we managed to give them out without too much interference. The second year, we flew in directly to Moscow on British Airways, and the KGB clearly knew who was coming in from the name list, probably, and they went through everybody's stuff with a fine-tooth comb and really terrorized the kids, took everything. We had nothing left to give away.
Everything Jewish, you mean?
Not only everything Jewish. I mean, some kids had, like, copies of their father's Playboy magazine or whatever, which was considered hardcore pornography by the Soviet authorities in those days. And it is a different world. I mean, Jews went to the Soviet Union in those days either individually or on paid missions or in groups with the main purpose of giving out bits of Jewish culture, whether it was a Talmud or a Siddur or a Chumash, whatever it was. and meeting with refuseniks and giving them encouragement and whatever. And Soviet policy, which changed over the years, long before the Soviet Union ended its inglorious existence, at that time, it was almost impossible to get out. And basically, you had to ransom yourself. If you got an invitation from an immediate family member living in Israel or whatever, you could begin a long, slow process, during which time you couldn't work, you couldn't legally earn any salary, any income at all, and you had to pay, sort of reimburse, theoretically, the Soviet government for your higher education. So a lot of Jews who left in those days, back in the 70s, say, were doctors, lawyers, professors, who had spent a long time in school. And the government put a price tag on their education and said, fine, when you pay us back for this, we'll let you go. And that was the first of many things that amounted to bribes. And sometimes, you know, a foreign government, like the government of Israel, or a philanthropic group in Israel, would pay the bribe in order to
liberate the refusenik.
Either liberate the refusenik or to acquire some talented, stellar person,
right,
you know, with a talent that could be useful. But it was, in a certain sense, trafficking human beings.
I remember the bumper stickers, don't buy Pepsi, Pepsi sells to Russia, Russia sells Jews, in that period of time. And there was a, you know, it was really a difficult period. There were millions of Jews living in the Soviet Union who couldn't get out.
Essentially in captivity. Right. And there is a long Jewish tradition. I mean, I don't know where the tradition begins or where the mitzvah comes from, but ransoming the captives.
Right, Pidyon Shvuyim.
Right.
Right. It's a central mitzvah.
Which in the Middle Ages, I mean, pirates captured Jews in the Mediterranean and imprisoned them all over the Mediterranean, and Jewish communities would save them.
Yeah, actually.
By paying.
Right. I mean, it was a common practice. If you needed money, capture, take into prison the local rabbi and ransom him to the community. You know, it's weird to see some of the same people running the Soviet Union now are so heavily involved in the KGB, like, you know, Vladimir Putin, for example.
Right, for example.
We will talk next week, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Shin Shinim on Israel, representatives of the State of Israel in America, here from the Weintraub Israel Center, Chen Dinachi and Tamir Shakuri. Boker Tov, good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
And it's not too early to say Leshana Tova, a good year and a healthy year.
Thank you, you too.
So you've been in Tucson, in America, now for like a month and a half. What is your experience of how Jews in America do Judaism that's different from your experience in Israel?
So I personally think that being Jewish in America is a lot different than being Jewish in Israel, because when you're Jewish in Israel, it's kind of the default, like most people are Jewish, so you don't really have to make an effort in your day-to-day life just to practice your Judaism, because like the country itself, like in Shabbat, everything is not working, there's no public transportation, the food in public places is kosher, and I don't know, it's just like a Jewish country, so everything's Jewish. And in America, you have to acknowledge and act on the fact that you're Jewish in order to maintain your Jewish identity, which I think is really cool. And overall in Tucson, I mean, Tucson is a huge city, but the Jewish community feels like a little village. I feel like I see everyone
every day. It's like a shtetl, actually. It's
it really
has that closeness. Tamira, what are your observations so far?
I think that that Tucson is a very special place. I find it very interesting how everyone is so enthusiastic about learning about Israel, and in several congregations we even teach Hebrew, and it's a great honor to be the people that that the students remember as their Hebrew teachers. Like the first, I have a class that I'm their first encounter with Hebrew letters and Hebrew words, and it's so satisfying and it's so amazing to find out that there is a community abroad, 24 hours a flight away from us, that is so eager to learn Hebrew and about Israel. So it really warms our heart, and it's awesome to see that.
What's the biggest surprise you've had within the Jewish world, you know, in Chutz Laaretz, right, in the outside world, not Israel?
I think that a big surprise for me is that the synagogue is such a big center that I'm not used to. I'm used to a small synagogue, that we all come together and pray and that's it. But here we have activities, we have lunch and learn, we have all those things, and it's amazing.
Yeah, and I think that also the fact that there's actually schools, like religious schools or Hebrew schools at some of the congregation, it was a big surprise for me. And also the fact that the Reform and Conservative movements were so big in America, which I love. I really love, because I think that it gives you more space for everyone and it's more receptive, and you have like, you can choose the way you practice your Judaism, which is something I think that needs to happen in Israel as well and does not happen enough.
Well, then you guys can export it when you go back. thanks, guys. Shana Tova Matuka. Good and a sweet year, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you. So Shana Tova.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us?
The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life, 322-7035.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Or, good morning.
Good morning, L'Shana Tova.
Shana Tova, it's that time of year.
It really is. Tikatevu v'techatemu. You're written and sealed in the Book of Life. So, in teaching about the holidays, mm-hmm. there's lots of different ways. You know, the big problem for all of us is we have a month in which it seems like every day is a new holiday and they're all big.
Right.
How do you deal with the process of teaching about the Chagim, about
sure.
Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Simchat Torah?
Well, I think you make an important point about the sense that it's a bit of a crowded time, and each of the four holidays coming up is so unique. We have one specifically for the new year. We have one specifically for repentance. We have one specifically for celebrating the time when we were wandering in the desert. And we have a specific holiday that celebrates the receiving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. So it's a lot of information to encode and to know. And there are a lot of different kinds of celebrations and practices. And there are different kinds of thinking and sort of frames of mind that we walk and talk ourselves into together. So you can't learn all that at once. And lo and behold, the holidays come around every year, just like the circle of a wheel. So what we don't quite commit to memory this year, we'll have another opportunity next year. So there's a sense that things build. And as you look at an educational program, for example, you know, at THA, we're a K-8 program. You think about what is appropriate for the kindergarten level, for kids who are 5 turning 6. And then how about those kiddos who have already had a bar bat mitzvah and they're 14 and very much getting into the world of young adulthood, although there's high school and a ways to go there. Their thinking is much different and more sophisticated than we'd see with younger kids. So we go from the tactile, from the hands-on. We have our apples and honey. You know,
the youngest kids can touch the shofar and then learn how to
right.
blow it.
And I remember as a kid seeing how a shofar was made. And
yeah, we do that with our religious school kids. They all get a chance to make a shofar sometime in a couple year process.
Beautiful.
Right?
And at Anshai, I'm thinking about the way that they stretch out the Torah.
Yeah,
and, you know, they have
Torah
a learning
around.
Torah, and
you can
touch
now.
It and yeah. hold it. And it's amazing. You don't get that chance to interact with the parchment and the ink necessarily. So there's a lot of ways to kind of encode what we're doing through hands-on tactile experiences. And then there are the questions that we ask, the things that we think about in terms of understanding ourselves better and setting different goals or revisiting goals that we might have set that we want to keep striving towards.
It's a great time for all of that. And I think in a funny way, we all need some of those different ways of being
yeah.
touched in this season.
Right. With all this variety, different people have a different way to access what's meaningful for them at this time of year.
Shana Tova, Tikatevu v'techatemu, may be written and sealed in the Book of Life for a good year.
Gamar Chatima Tova. Thank you.
Thanks, John. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community.
Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Three Jewish brothers get together to talk about the gifts they sent their mother for her 90th birthday. One, Milton, is a successful doctor. The second, Marvin, is a powerful lawyer. The third, Melvin, is a prosperous businessman. Ah, it's too bad their aged mama lives so far away in another city, but they have gone all out for her birthday. Milton, the doctor, says, "I had a big new mansion built for mama." Marvin, the lawyer, says, "I had my Mercedes dealer deliver her a fancy Mercedes limousine with a German trained chauffeur." Melvin, the businessman, says, "You know how Mama loves reading the Torah. Well, she can't read anymore. She can't see so well. So I met a rabbi who told me about a parrot that recites the whole Torah with commentary. It took 20 rabbis 10 years to teach him. I had to pledge to give $1 million to the temple, but let me tell you, it was worth it. All Mama has to do is name a Torah portion, and the parrot will chant it and give commentary." Soon after her 90th birthday, Mama sends her sons thank you notes. She writes, "It's such a shame none of you could make it here for my birthday because you're all such big shots. But thank you for your gifts. First, Milton, the house you built for me is huge. I live in one room and the kitchen only, and I have to clean the whole house, but thanks anyway. Next, Marvin, I'm too old to go anywhere. Why do I need the fancy car? I stay home, my groceries are delivered, I never use the Mercedes except to go to the doctor. Plus, the driver you hired is a Nazi and he's eating me out of house and home. But the thought was good. Thanks. Ah, but my dearest Melvin, you were the only son to have the good sense to give a little thought to your gift. The chicken was delicious." You see, she thought the parrot was a chicken, and she cooked, well. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, final one of 5777, a special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Thursday morning in Reform congregations on Rosh Hashanah, Friday morning in Conservative and Orthodox shuls, we will read a special Rosh Hashanah portion, the great and terrible story of the binding of Isaac, the Akedah, where God tests Abraham by having him almost but not quite sacrifice Isaac on a rock. As we remember the trauma of Isaac and the faith and struggle of Abraham, we know that on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we stand before God, open to the judgment that comes on Yom HaDin, the day of decision. May we come to know the openness that this judgment requires, and so atone honestly for our sins and errors of the past year. Poet Chaim Guri has an interpretation of this tale from a different direction. The translation is by Tet Karmi, Alav HaShalom, my teacher in Israel. May his rest be in peace. The poem is called Yerusha, Heritage. The ram came last of all, and Abraham did not know that it came to answer the boy's question, first of his strength when his day was waning. The old man raised his head, seeing that it was no dream and that the angel stood there, the knife slipped from his hand. The boy, released from his bonds, saw his father's back. Isaac, the story goes, was not sacrificed. He lived for many years, saw what was good in life until his eyesight dimmed. But he bequeathed that hour to his offspring. We are born with a knife in our hearts. A powerful and troubling message of testing and mortality in this holiest of seasons. We stand before God now, as Abraham and Isaac both did, and face a unique challenge. Knowing our mortal status, can we rise to affirm our essential holiness? You know, we're doubly blessed this week with an additional Torah reading for Shabbat Shuvah, the Sabbath of Repentance, next Saturday. It's the penultimate section of the final book of the Torah, Devarim. Ha'azinu composes Moses' last poetic words to the people of Israel before his death. It's an elaborate instruction, a charge, and a prediction of the future for the Israelites. Hazinu is a final look inside the thoughts of the greatest leader our people has ever had, and a fascinating snapshot of what was predicted for the 12 tribes once they were to arrive in the land of Israel. Hazinu is a poem, a long one, and the powerful poetry includes a description of God's words dropping like a gentle rain on tender grass, a vision of the Lord's justice and faith as complete and flawless. It describes God's love for Israel, bringing forth honey from the very rock to nourish and favor our people, a kind of prediction of the way that Israel has made the desert bloom today in the modern state. In language rich and complex, but also challenging, Moses promises that God rewards those who preserve justice, but punishes those who fail to keep faith. In one memorable phrase that has made its way into our Siddur, our prayer book, Moses says, Ki shem Adonai ekra havu godel Eloheinu, I will proclaim the name of the Lord and ascribe greatness to our God. Accordingly, our role as Jews is both to praise God and to seek to create justice. Both are important. Both support each other in our world. We praise God and acknowledge that justice comes from the one source of morality. And then we work to assure that justice for all is central to our moral life. We must strive not only to be good, but to create goodness in our world, now and in this new 5778 year. When we return on To Jewish, our good friend and guest, Yizhar Hess, head of the Masorti movement, the conservative movement in Israel, will update us on, well, many issues, including the Kotel prayer area and how things are working for liberal Jews, non-Orthodox Jews in Israel. Find out when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
Tango, oh, tango.
Join your voice with renowned Jewish singer Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson Jay. Sing, dance, and celebrate the holiday of Sukkot with the whole family. Billy Jonas has been entertaining the world with his funky folk music for years. Join the fun with Billy Jonas on Sunday, October 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tucson Jay. Tickets include a light dinner and a PJ Library story. For tickets and more information, visit TucsonJCC.org or call 520-299-3000.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman made a discreet visit to Israel last week, despite the fact that Israel and Saudi Arabia have no official diplomatic ties. The Israeli Prime Minister's office and foreign ministry refused to comment. Qatari media and news outlets, like London-based Al Arabi Al Jadid newspaper, used reports as a further opportunity to attack the Saudi royal family, which is heading Arab intervention in Yemen, Syria, and other locations. And, frankly, the Saudis have been getting closer to Israel for a while now. The Saudi response came shortly, with Saudi website Elaf, which often interviews senior Israeli officials, by the way, reporting that there was a visit by a senior Arab official, but rather than Saudi, it was a Qatari official who visited. That seems unlikely. A senior Elaf source told the newspaper that a high-level Qatari official quietly visited Tel Aviv midweek and discussed security issues with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, wrote the Saudis. The visit lasted 2 days before meeting with Kuwaiti Emir Ahmed al-Jaber al-Sabah and U.S. President Donald Trump to discuss the Qatar diplomatic crisis. The senior Qatari emissary discussed security issues with Israeli representatives, including military steps that concern Doha because of their potential to escalate the Qatar crisis with Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and the UAE. This, again, from the Saudis, pretending that it was a Qatari and not a Saudi who visited the Israelis. The Qatari official explained the fragile situation his country is in to his host, Israeli hosts in the hope that Israel will help reduce tensions and even solve the crisis through behind-the-scenes efforts. According to reports, Israel will look into the issue. Official Israeli sources refuse to confirm or deny the reports. Publications in Egypt, Bahrain, and the UAE all joined in the media frenzy. As expected, news of the visit was not warmly welcomed by the Arab public. The reports published in Arab media have negative connotations due to their connections to Israel, said a reporter who originally sparked the frenzy over the alleged visit. It is important to remember, however, that in the distant past, there were Arab representatives in Israel, an ambassador from Mauritius, financial representatives from Qatar, Tunisia, Morocco, and Oman, all at the same time that an Israeli representative was posted in Doha, the capital city of Qatar. Even today, according to official sources, there are secret economic and trade relationships between Israel and some of these countries. Well, we have reported that on Too Jewish. The prime minister and other senior government officials have spoken of cooperation, have hinted at relationships with countries with whom Israel does not have diplomatic relations. In other Arab-Israeli world news, last week, the Palestinian Authority General Intelligence Service, that their secret police, basically, arrested Mohammed Jaber, a Hebron resident, after he hosted right-wing Knesset member Yehuda Glick at his own home. September 3rd, Jaber hosted Glick at his house in Hebron to celebrate Eid al-Adha, major Muslim holiday. Glick shared photos on Facebook of Jaber and himself sitting around a table of sweets and fruits alongside Jaber's family. "Happy Eid al-Adha, my friend Mohammed Jaber in Hebron. God willing, all of us will live here in peace," said Glick in a post. The Palestinian Authority has long criticized the member of Knesset Glick for visiting the Temple Mount, the holiest site for Jews and for Muslims, important as well, referring to him as an extremist in its official media outlets. Nabil Abu Rudine, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's spokesman, recently described Yehuda Glick's visits to the Temple Mount as provocations that will lead to grave consequences. Glick believes that Jews and Muslims should be able to access and pray freely on the Temple Mount. Glick said that he went to Jaber's home to wish him a happy holiday. "I've known Mohammed since I became a member of Knesset," Glick says. "We have met many times. We speak on the telephone every couple of weeks." Over the past year, Glick, a member of Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's Likud party, has organized a number of meetings between Jaber and groups of Israelis, including settlers in Otniel and Kiryat Arba and young people in the pre-army educational programs. "He is truly a man of peace and coexistence," the member of Knesset said. "His arrest shows that the Palestinian Authority is not interested in dialogue and normalization." Jaber is an interesting guy. He told a TV interviewer in July he used to incite violence against Israeli Jews, but today wants to coexist with them. He also talked about how he planned to bomb an IDF base in Be'er Sheva several years ago, but changed his mind after having a positive experience with a soldier. "A switch was turned in my brain," Jaber said, explaining how his interaction with the soldier transformed his approach to life. Glick spoke to U.S. Ambassador to Israel David Friedman and coordinator of government activities in the territories, Major General Yoav Mordechai of Israel, to intervene with the Palestinian Authority to try to secure Jaber's release. Palestinian officials responsible for outreach to Israeli society did not respond. And after 25 years as president of American Jewish University and its predecessor, the University of Judaism in Los Angeles, Robert Wexler will step down at the end of the academic year next spring. "Leading such a remarkable institution for so long has been a great honor," Wexler said. "I truly appreciate the dedication of the men and women on the AJU staff and faculty, all of whom mean so much to me. It is they who have made American Jewish University a force in American Jewish life." Wexler started at the school at the age of 17 as an undergraduate student at the University of Judaism. AJU was known as that until 2007 when it merged with Brandeis Bardeen Institute. After Wexler's ordination at Jewish Theological Seminary in 78, he returned as the assistant dean of students, eventually ascending to the presidency in 1992 at the newish Bel Air campus. Under his stewardship, the university opened the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies in 1996 and merged with Brandeis Bardeen. Wexler is credited with overseeing numerous campus construction projects, growing the university's endowment from $5 million to more than $100 million. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We are delighted to welcome back our old friend Yizhar Hess, head of the Masorti, the conservative movement in Israel, to Too Jewish. You may remember Yizhar from his time as our Israel shliach, as our maven on Israel, and his various visits over the years. Yizhar, we started talking about the issue with the Kotel, the Western Wall. And just to clarify, while the Western Wall area that everybody thinks of as the central prayer area is the last retaining wall of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the wall actually extends quite a ways. It goes to the left, if you're looking at it, into the old city, into an area, you know, of structures. And then to the right, it goes down to something called the Davidson Center, Davidson Archaeological Park, which is where this egalitarian prayer area is supposed to be constructed. That area is already acceptable for egalitarian prayer now, correct? In other words, you can men and women can pray there together.
Yes, this is true. The Masorti movement, conservative movement, is running the site partly since the year 2000. We started with a very few egalitarian minyanim every week, and now we have more than 100,000 Jews coming to pray there on an annual basis. Yet the compromise was much wider than the actual right to prayer. The compromise that we signed was to allow us to partly run the place, meaning to have representation in the governing body, to have budgets to allow services there, religious services there, to have it constructed in a way that would not feel like the back seat of the bus, but a place that is a national site, that is a main site. We wanted as much as possible, and as much as it is not necessarily acceptable as a democratic value, to take the paradigm of separate but equal and to see and to check if it might work. When I say that we really made some serious concessions here, I'm talking also about that. We all know that none of us should be proud with the paradigm of separate but equal. But we thought that in this very sensitive place, we might give it a try. This is why our disappointment for the fact that even that was not implemented is so horrific.
Now, the reason it wasn't implemented after, you know, Natan Sharansky is a hero for all Jews, I think, and his extraordinary work on this is, you know, beyond expression. I think everybody understands how difficult it is to get Jews to agree, let alone ultra-Orthodox, Orthodox, modern Orthodox, conservative, Reform. I mean, this is a difficult thing to accomplish, and he really accomplished it. But politics in Israel somehow involves religion, doesn't it? Is that, that's kind of what happened, right?
Yeah, this is exactly what happened here. In Israel, there is no separation of religion and state, and religious parties who are Orthodox, there are no religious parties who are not Orthodox in Israel, have significant power over the decision who will be the prime minister of Israel. And you know, politics is all about power, and therefore, in spite of the fact that they are far from being a majority in Israel, Orthodox in Israel are not more than 25% of Jews in Israel. And I'm talking now Haredi and modern Orthodox as well. And they are not more than 25%, but in spite of it, their political power is quite influential because they are in the middle as on some other issues that are not religion and state, and they can choose whether they would go with the left or with the right, at least theoretically, and therefore their power is much bigger than the number of seats they have in the Knesset. And they exercise this this power in this in this issue, in spite of the fact that we were able to get reasonable agreement with them. They slowly but surely, a few days after the signature, decided not to back this agreement because of pressure they had from their constituencies and because of the fact that there was no leadership, no leadership on their part, but not less important, or even more, no leadership from the government of the State of Israel. The fact that the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, did not put his feet on the door or didn't say what needs to be said by a leader, meaning this is something that is so important for Jews all over the world and in Israel, on that I'm not compromising again. This is something that was disappointing, and I think that personally, he believes that this is the right solution, but politically, at least this is what he told us, he doesn't have the power to implement it.
It's fascinating that someone who has been prime minister now for 8 years always seems to feel like he doesn't have the power to implement courageous solutions. I'm just reminded of how we were told how King Hussein of Jordan was always on the verge of being toppled for like 40 years. Is Bibi Netanyahu the King Hussein of Israel today?
Well, I wouldn't exaggerate, but in a way you're right. You know, we need to remember that this government is probably the best ever government that the Haredi parties ever had. You know, it's a government that gave them exactly what they wanted and even more. And to think that they would risk that government And might find Lapid or Gabay as prime minister because of an agreement that they actually think that is reasonable for them. This is something that is beyond my understanding, and I think the prime minister made a political mistake. I think they wouldn't have left his government, and therefore I really criticize him for lack of leadership on that.
So where things stand now is the current situation basically just stays in place, the status quo. The women on the wall are going to have Rosh Chodesh each month. Can we expect more protests, violence, you know, busloads of Haredim, of ultra-Orthodox, brought in to heckle them? What can we expect, do you think?
Well, we went to court a week ago, back to court, to the Supreme Court.
Right, the Israeli Supreme Court.
The Israeli Supreme Court. And basically we said one of the two things. We are willing to accept the compromise in spite of the fact that the other side decided not to accept it. So if the court asks us to do this again, we'll probably say yes. If not, we are demanding that the public side of the Kotel, where we the other side of the Kotel, the known Kotel, will be split to three different sections, three different azarot, the men's section, the women's section, and a family section. And we think that maybe for the beginning, as a just solution to begin with, this is something that should have been decided decades ago. I'm not naive. I'm not sure that the Supreme Court would give us that ultimate solution in the known Kotel. But and there is no verdict yet. But the judges were very firm with the representative of the state, of the government, with asking him very, even aggressively, politely, but aggressively, whether the government would rethink the sustained, would maybe defreeze the what was frozen. And if not, the hint was that that the Supreme Court might rule that that compromise that was achieved will be implemented by court. It's a serious thing. I'm not sure what would be the end of this process, but it was clear that after almost 30 years that the court is dealing with the Kotel issue, that they are, I would say, not very elegantly, that they are fed up with the fact that there is a solution on the table that seems reasonable to so many Jews all over the world and in Israel, and for some political narrow reason, it cannot be implemented. So to tell you what would be next month, I'm not sure, but in a few days, a week from now probably, the government needs to answer to the court, and we are waiting anxiously to see what would be the answer.
So you're an attorney by training. In the process of determining, you know, if the Supreme Court rules that the government has to implement this compromise, will they then have to implement the compromise?
The Supreme Court, it's a tricky question, because the Supreme Court cannot force the government to accept its resolution. What I think that might say, that since this case was in front of the court might take the program or all the principles of the decision of the compromise and enforce it as an individual ruling. I'm not sure. Constitutionally, it's a little tricky here. I'm sure that the court would not be eager to do it, but it seems like it's one of the possibilities. The other possibility, and it happened once or more than once in court before, that they would decide, the judges, listen, it's too political for us to rule. We encourage the government to do A, but we will not force it to do A. It's too risky to gamble. I'm optimistic, so I would like to hope that it will be solved either with court or out of court, but with the compromise that we all believe in.
From your mouth to God's ears, we like to say. The Masorti movement has grown a great deal. Tell me a little bit, as you approach this new year and the excitement of the growth, what do you see for the immediate future of liberal movements in general in Israel, particularly the Masorti movement, the conservative movement?
Well, you know, Rabbi, in spite of the fact that the establishment is working against us, I think that we can all feel very good, both us, the Masorti movement, and the Reform movement, with our achievements. We grew dramatically in the last decade. Actually, the two movements doubled its size in Israel. Today, 7.1% of Jews in Israel would define themselves as conservative or reformed Jews, about half and half. 7.1%, it's not a majority, but it's not an insignificant minority. It's more than half a million Israelis. So, and again, this number, it's doubled its size in the last decade, so we can feel proud. Now, we are right before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, our high holidays, and this week we are publishing, and the Masorti movement is publishing, it's Machzor, the prayer book for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And we are doing it not by ourselves only, but as a partnership with Yediot Achronot, the biggest publisher in Israel. Now, just think about it. If we are able to print our Machzor that is sold in all the Israeli bookstores with the biggest publisher in Israel, it tells you something about the market. It tells you something about the fact that the Israel society is changed in a way that this mainstream product can be sold in Israel and hopefully would be a bestseller. We have some hopes about it, and I think it's quite realistic. It means that we have reasons to be optimistic in an environment that is not necessarily optimistic when you come to talk about the tension between Judaism and politics in Israel. And that gives me lots of hope. I'm proud that we are part of that revolution, even in Israel, a revolution that would make Israel, I hope, more Jewish and more democratic.
Great goals across the board. Where can people go to find out more about the Masorti movement, the conservative movement in Israel?
Well, www.masorti.org.
You have to spell Masorti in English transliteration. I'm sorry.
M-A-S-O-R-T-I.org.
Great. I think I now spell it correctly. I want to thank Yisar Hess for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Wish you Shana Tova Matuka, to you and your whole family, a good and a sweet year.
Sure. Shana Tova.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout for this Jewish year.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Here on Too Jewish, our guest will be Rotem Malach of the World Zionist Organization explaining the Israeli Supreme Court. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes for Rosh Hashanah, beginning September 20th, Wednesday night. It's from Israeli singer Yehudit Ravitz, continuing a theme we started last night at Slichot Services, Apologies for Errors. My friends, may you have a Lashana Tova Tikatevu V'Techatemu, a good new year of 5778, and a Shavua Tov, a good week and a good year, we pray, of peace.
Bye. Sar hechasuf ve'reach yaldut reach devek va'oren u'lichach lelo shel haguf im ayu inuim hem ifligu alecha mifrasi halavan el ha'ofel sh
sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.